Hello, and welcome to The Staffing Show, the only podcast that delivers tools, tips, and tactics from the staffing and recruiting industry's top executives and thought leaders.
If you're a technology leader in the staffing industry, you're likely feeling the pressure to deliver scalability, efficiency, and innovation in a very fast-moving, dynamic industry. The challenge: siloed systems, security concerns, and the constant demand for automation. At Aviante, we get it. That's why we've built an end-to-end AI and automation-powered platform designed to connect the entire staffing workflow from agency to talent to employer and back. With seamless integrations, robust APIs, SOC 2 Type 2 compliance, and cutting-edge automation, Aviante helps recruiters work smarter, data flow seamlessly, and businesses scale effortlessly. Security, intelligence, performance, it's all built in. If you're ready to elevate your technology strategy, we're here and ready to talk. Visit aviante.com and take your staffing firm to the next level.
Hello, everyone. Thank you for joining us for another episode of The Staffing Show. Today, I am super excited to be joined by Dan Mastropolo, who's the president and founder of Oak City Advisors, and Tim Ratliff, the senior director of technology and innovation at Skillwork. Tim, Dan, super excited to jump into the conversation today. Thanks for joining me.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thanks for having us, Dave.
Awesome. Really excited. Well, to kick things off, today we're going to be talking about technology leadership and staffing, and digging deep into some of the challenges that a lot of staffing agencies are facing. But to kick things off, Dan and Tim, maybe we could do quick backgrounds on who you are. And I always like to hear how you guys got into the staffing industry.
Yeah. So my background is software engineering. Did a lot of work for defense type projects and a lot of development there. Moved into management and found I kind of enjoyed the opportunity to make the work life better for the engineers. Followed that through to some other industries. A friend of mine that I worked with for several years started Skillwork, which is a skilled trades staffing company. We've always stayed in touch, and he came to me and said, "Hey, I need somebody to head up my technology. We need somebody to understand the strategy, where we're going, understand the tooling, understand, you know, what would work best, just put together the whole strategy and lead it forward. Now, would you be willing to do that?" At that point in time, I was ready to make a change out of the corporate world and understand what small business was, but also understand what the staffing world was. And I've been pleasantly surprised at the size of this business and the opportunities that are here.
Yeah, and where were you at before? You had some fairly significant corporate experience, right?
Yeah, so I was at Raytheon for 17 years, again, working a lot of defense-related projects, things like that. And then I was at Union Pacific Railroad for just under 10 years, handling a lot of logistic on empty car movements.
Awesome. That's great. How about you, Dan? I know you've been on the podcast before, but for those of you that haven't met you yet.
Yeah, for sure. So I'm Dan Mastropolo, like you said, president and founder of Oak City Advisors, but I've been in the staffing industry since 2011, basically I'm coming into year 15. Started my career with Randstad, started as a general staffing consultant, grew to a top VP, and then really started on the independent side in 2017 to basically current. You know, I've basically started and exited a couple of light industrial companies, staffing firms. I'm still on the board for a company, Staffing A to Z and Shift Fillers, high volume light industrial company. But I started Oak City in 2020. Really with a lot of the premise of what we're going to talk about today. Coming from my own agencies, having to map new softwares, ERPs, really try to like make my team's ability to be able to operate within those systems. I just ended up really kind of self-taught into all the inner workings of multiple different softwares, primarily JobDiva, Bullhorn, and Aviante. But really starting in a little bit past 2020, we were managing kind of the equivalent of an EOR, got introduced to Venture HR. Venture and I partnered on a couple of different things and ended up actually working with them as I helped build the Venture Staffing Alliance. And while I was there, we took care of about 500 staffing companies, had a lot of integrations into the Prism world. And really ever since COVID, it just hasn't stopped with the amount of technology that comes into our industry. But one of the things I noticed was a lot of mid-sized firms were just really slow to hiring tech leaders. And a big reason I heard from them of why that was the case was, you know, most of us that built staffing companies basically started in a recruiter or sales seat. We were not technology leaders. And so, you know, there's this little gun shyness that I could feel that most of us didn't feel comfortable managing tech leaders and really knowing what exactly that role was. And to be fair, even in the mid-market, we don't necessarily need them all the time. We need them for system setups, some integrations, reporting. I mean, obviously that changes the higher up the scale as you get towards enterprise and the sensitiveness of it. But it didn't change the fact that it was still a skill that was needed, to really optimize these systems. So, really what I started Oak City, it was really to bring that resource primarily to people outside of the Bullhorn world. Today, we do obviously also support Bullhorn clients, but it was just really critical to give people an outlet to have somebody that had been there, done that. We take a lot of pride that we're one of the top integration and third-party software companies for the industry today. We have about 18 clients. It's just shy of about $4 billion of revenue in the industry, and just have a really unique outlook of how everybody's utilizing kind of similar tools, but very uniquely different in their own ecosystems.
Awesome. With both of your guys' experience, I'm excited to kind of jump into some of the challenges that we're seeing and hearing about in the market. And Dan, I know you had there's a recent article you put up on Staffing Hub about kind of the lack of tech leadership in the staffing industry. And I think even more importantly, and something that a lot of tech CTOs, or in your role, Tim, people are feeling burnout from a tech perspective in the staffing industry. I think it makes sense because we've had an unbelievable push into adopt all of the tech. How fast can you get tech into the platform and your staffing agency? And the future is these staffing platforms. And obviously, I'm as a tech founder, I believe in a lot of that. But I think that that also comes with a whole bunch of challenges that people in the industry are facing today. And so maybe we could start the conversation with Dan. You could jump into just how you could describe the issue in terms of the tech burnout and what you're seeing from your perspective.
Yeah, for sure. So I think it's really unique, honestly, even how the three of us ended together. Basically, Tim made a migration from Creely earlier this year to Aviante and got a call because we're a certified integration partner for Aviante. But after that kind of integration and implementation on his side, he came to me and said, you were a major resource for us coming into this world, right? I wish I had more of that. And I think a lot of tech leaders in our industry feel that. All right. What ends up happening is, one, either because of the lack of leadership or, sometimes the lack of corporate support and timing to actually see these things materialize, we as tech leaders in the firms, we get a lot of pressure beginning of the year, right? Here's your budget. Here's what I need from you. Here are the things that we're trying to optimize. Here are the gaps in basically the operational efficiencies. We lay out this beautiful plan of the 12 to the 18 month roadmap, get a budget allocated, and it's not even 6 months that all of a sudden we're getting the pressure of like, where are we on an ROI? Well, a lot of these things don't materialize that fast, right? There's timing mechanisms of, exactly where we see gains in that ROI and adoption. And typically it comes after that 12 to 18 month mark as we start getting those principles actually foundationally into the principles of the operating side. And a lot of us, that feel the stress and also, the pain that comes with that comes from, we never really get to fulfill the vision that we set forth in those plans. We're constantly asked to pivot. We basically typically, end up having to be asked to migrate systems, which then involves a lot of us to, essentially nothing but absorbing more and more tech debt, which then we basically have to then untwang and untangle to then basically gain efficiencies of a new system. Historically, most of us change ATSs every 2 years for something new, something shiny. But the reality is, not everything is the grass is greener on the other side. It can get a lot greener if you just keep watering and keep holding those partners accountable and also work hand in hand with operations. And personally, for me, big reason that we joke around that Oak City has such a good kind of momentum in the industry right now for helping companies like Skillwork and Tim is because we were all operators first. So we're operators building tech, not the other way around. And our unique ability to take a vision like Tim and know how to kind of get there a little bit faster, has been a staple. But I definitely know the days of just feeling deflated and just never really getting to that kind of overall arching vision.
Yeah. I think, going back to some of the demands that are on the role of anybody that's in tech leadership within the staffing industry, Tim, maybe you could talk a little bit about what your experience has been, some of the challenges that you're experiencing day to day.
Yeah. When I came to Skillwork, one of the things I was tasked to do was to not only put together a vision, but a roadmap for our technology that would allow us to be 10x. We didn't want to be getting to be 10x and then the technology was in the way. And then while you've got all of that pressure of all the talent, and then you're trying to make a change. So we wanted to be out ahead of that and have the technology in place for you to do that, which I think is a great a great idea and the right vision there. You know, the challenge that I faced was initially, and where I talked to Dan, was it amazes me how many choices there are out there from ATSs and reporting tools and messaging tools, just all kinds of things are out there. And you begin to wonder, because they all say they all integrate with everything. And there's probably some truth to all of it. But the question starts to become, well, how well does it integrate? Or what has been your experience on what it didn't integrate? Or where did it, you know, just a lot of that kind of thing. And so, you know, as you begin to walk down that road, you're also trying to understand, in my case especially, learn the different departments in the BizOps, from the lead side of the business to the recruiting side of the business to the mid back office sides of the business. What are they doing? What do they need? Where are they tripping? What are their dreams and visions for how that could be? And in some cases, they don't have one. In some cases, they really have a really cool idea, like, I just want to push a button, it all happens.
Yeah.
And so you're trying to map all of that together, and you're trying to pick a solution. You know, I feel like with Aviante, we've picked a very good solution. And of course, now it's managing the change. Managing the change from, hey, it doesn't work like I'm used to managing the change of, we need this to be a little bit better here, to, hey, I want to be able to see this data or see this side of the business. How do I get there? And, you know, at Skillwork, we have very positive, very patient, gracious people. But even in that, you know, as a tech leader, you take on your own without outside influence, you take on the desire to meet the need and the want and the ask as quickly as possible. I mean, that's just naturally how you are. If you're in this type of role, you're in there because you like providing solutions that work and that get there quickly and that people value. And so it's a natural thing to want to bring the right solution up front, and it can wear on you over time as you begin to understand, well, maybe I misstepped here, or maybe I didn't understand this, or, hey, is this going to take a little bit of time? Can you wait till we get there?
Yeah. And how is, from a resourcing perspective, how does this compare?
Yeah. Well, you know, small business, you know, to corporate is vastly different.
Yeah.
But what's interesting is, you know, I think the small business mindset can be very good. You know, some small businesses like Skillwork, we're not afraid to invest in the right areas. We know that we're not going to save ourselves to prosperity. We know that. I think the corporate world, a lot of times, sometimes they feel that way, that they think that they can save their way to prosperity, and they don't actually take the risk or step in. Whereas I think small businesses, they're here because they're naturally okay with feeling risk.
Yeah.
But the resources are there. You know, a small business, typically like Skillwork, we did not want to be a tech company. That's not what we wanted. We didn't want to go out and hire 10 developers and integrators and do all that. That's not what we wanted. So then that also then leads to your relying on either the tech provider, the solution provider, or some outside vendors to really help you manage the integration and the needs you have.
Yeah. And I was just looking it up. I think the general business IT spend is like 5 to 10%. And then for staffing, typically seeing 2 to 3%, which is, I mean, honestly, this is the same story that we hear. I talk about frequently about marketing, because my background, I'm always like, there's an underspend on marketing. I think, and tech investment is also an area where that can vary. There's a gap in terms of what could be and what's actually happening. What are some of the, you guys have talked about this a little bit in terms of resources and the network side of it, and part of the reason that we're all here, but what are some of the ways that you've been able to solve these challenges within the market today?
Sure. Oh yeah, I can take that one first. So one of the biggest gaps that personally we've seen on the Oak City side is, to Tim's point, right? They go through this process where they go from sales. Sales basically tells them all the great things that these things can do. And then there's that sales to implementation handoff. And when implementation gets it, it's really a carte blanche kind of implementation. They've got a checklist. They're not necessarily looking at things like data validation and mapping and truly trying to understand the equivalent business of a Skillworks or the staffing company. For us, where we've really, I think, been able to help a ton is because of the intimacy that we have in the knowledge of the internal architectures of the system, you know, and also because we were operators and understanding the business themselves, you know, and really what the directions are of the tech leaders or of the business, you know, tying things back to kind of the strategies or, you know, strategic plans for the year, or the 3-5 year vision, we're able to kind of like not necessarily slow down, but I use that analogy, slow down to speed up, right? Taking the time to actually go through and understand and ask the equivalent of the staffing firm, why do you do this a million times through those processes to truly understand? Is it something that got added? Is it something that was a nice to have? Did it just solve a gap because the other systems couldn't do what it was that maybe this new one can, you know, has led us to make better internal architecture decisions and really make sure that the data is validated to that then ensure that you have a little bit better implementation, but that you're also setting things up for scale, right? A lot of times what I just see is people just make these quick decisions because they have something that's pressing today, but that one thing is tied to one facet of the business, not this overall arching vision of that 3 to 5 year plan. And so, you know, what we do a lot of is not just, you know, that mapping, but it's also sitting there and really thinking about the progressions of those automations or potentially system and configurations, and really just trying to keep those things more geared towards the scale and what that business wants, which has, you know, obviously led us to being able to be one of the more recommended groups. But it's so critical to starting these relationships off right, right? We always joke around that saying garbage in, garbage out. It's the same thing. Like, you don't necessarily need to take all your data from here to there. Typically, most of the time you had a problem with the data the way that it was. So why recreate the problem? Because you're just going to have that now kind of instant roadblock, right? So the other thing that's always tricky is a lot of times that people do these migrations, the business doesn't stop, right? It's like that infamous saying, you're putting gas in a car while you're driving it. So that's where I just see a lot of times on the third-party vendors, they're trying to check a box to get an implementation live and just get billing. But that's a disservice to the staffing companies. And so personally, we take a lot of pride of really sitting in between that and making sure that we're being mindful through those processes.
Absolutely. And you talked about a handful of things there, but one of the areas that I think is worth probably could be, you guys probably have some deep insight into how you connect the tech strategy to the organization's overarching goals. I think that's one of the things that I see a lot of staffing agency owners kind of doing the shiny object where it's like, oh, we want this thing, we want this thing. And it's like, all right, well, actually does that be thought about how that lines up with your 3 to 5 year plan? But what approach are you guys taking to ensure that you're pulling the tech in and that is aligning with the overarching strategy?
The first thing we did was, or that I took on was understanding from the CEO and the COO perspective, where do they see this business going? Why did they feel that in this case, they were able to articulate, hey, 10X, we don't want to deal with the technology in the middle of it. And then what was it about the current stack we had that we felt like would limit that? Why wasn't it the current stack we had? Why wouldn't it get us there? One of the things I did was to evaluate not just the recruiting placement process, but more importantly, the onboarding and payment process. People don't stick around when they don't get paid. So, you know, taking a look at that process and realizing you could have awesome recruiters and a great sales process and place all kinds of people. But what are you doing on the onboarding and the paying side that is what gets them to have confidence in you to stay? Yeah. And so understanding all of that and getting the leadership to have that buy-in was critical. The other part that was very helpful was as we began to look at ATSs and kind of zero in on one, finding other executives in the industry that had experience there and could speak into, yeah, the implementation is bumpy. It is, you're not going to be comfortable. You are going to be at times feeling like you're flying blind, but it's okay. So having other executives speaking into them to get them to stay on board with the change you recommend. And then another thing we did to get the business to be ready for was, you know, we looked at change management and understanding that and talking to all of our people about this. And then also trying to involve as many as we could in that decision. Because I think one of the worst things you could do is come in as a tech leader and say, almost say, hey, this is mine. Because if it goes great, you're the hero, but odds are it's not going to go smooth. And now all of a sudden it's all on you. But when you have your other senior leadership or executives around you speaking into the users, hey, this is okay. This is what we chose. This is why we chose this. Let's stay on track. It's all right. We got to see beyond the hurdle and to where this is going to allow us to go. I think that's been a critical piece for us.
And it's not like you're kind of talking about, there's the cost benefit analysis of existing things, networking with the broader staffing industry, as well as with it internally, and then getting additional buy-in as well to make sure that you've got alignment with it moving forward. How do you guys manage? One of the things I hear about a lot, and I hear this as a pain point, is we bought this software, we switched ATSs, and people are still unhappy with it. and I think it's I would call it maybe expectation management. Within the staffing space, I think that this is my perspective on it, is I see frequently kind of like the technology is going to solve everything viewpoint. And the reality is like tech can only, you know, can do what it can do. But how do you guys manage expectations and assure alignment on that front?
I'll just go real quick, Dan. One of the first things that I've done is you need to be okay hearing the pain points.
Yep.
you know, it doesn't feel good as a tech leader. You don't want there to be pain points, but you got to be okay with, hey, tell me what's not working. Tell me where your pain points are. You know, sometimes it's a simple thing of like, oh no, the tool does it. It's just like this. Yep. And sometimes it's like, yeah, you're right. The tool just, it doesn't do that at all, man. You know, let me go see what other options maybe are out there for us. You know, one of the things that we're doing right now is what we call it a gap analysis. We're going through journeys of all of our departments.
Awesome.
We are saying, okay, we're using the tool now. We've got more comfortability in the tool, but where is it that not just this one tool, but all of our tools, whether it be Outlook, Teams, Word, all of them, DocuSign, where are we maybe having some rub and laying that out and saying, how do you want to attack this? In some cases, what's coming to light is it's not necessarily a tool thing. It's a decision that we've made in how we're implementing, leveraging the tool.
Yep.
That if we change, it might smooth it out. But I think first and foremost, being willing to accept and listen and hear and not take it personally, not something I have to continue to work on all the time, is not take it. They're not hating you because of the tool. Don't take it personal, but open the door and allow people to be heard, and then that they understand that you listened and you care about their pain points and you really do want that to be removed, I think is a huge first step in managing that expectation. I don't, Dan, what do you say?
I agree. And like kind of tying the two questions together, you know, we honestly follow a principle that's very much like a tech company rolling out a new software. And we call it that SDLC process, right? It's the software development lifecycle. But like to do those things, because of the fact that a lot of us as leaders go into new ecosystems where you're adopting, like, well, right back to that tech debt conversation, right? I don't see a lot of people that take the time to actually draw out every single technology that's in equation and really taking time to define what that system of record is, or the tool or function of that software, to take time to see, you know, that gap analysis, but also redundancies in the tech, right? Like communication layer is a prime example. Mm-hmm. You know, we have texting platform, we have a text, you know, option in the ERP. We normally have some VoIP system. We have Teams, we have Slack, we have this. It's like, it's so much almost overbearingness of communication in that. You know, this is one example of a redundancy of that. But by taking the time to actually map that and get actual senior leaders on the same page of what's happening, and then also looking at that wish list, you know, we personally tie that back to the strategic plans. And based on what I'm hearing from operations, you know, if revenue is a North Star, then I'm prioritizing those lifts based on what's going to support that revenue or whatever that is that year that they're basically telling me is that North Star of what's driving that strategic vision. But typically, to avoid that misalignment and buy-in, it's a lot easier when you include people into those. You know, you carve out your strategic plans, you have those silo meetings between the executive team and tech, executive team and op, tech and operations, and bringing that collaborativeness together. When you do that, it automatically gets everybody bought into the process. They understand their voices being heard, and they can also understand that when you say no, it's not no forever. It's no for now, because it's not the top thing that's driving what basically the ROIs are being driven from. You know, the groups that we've been able to do that with, we just have seen time and time again, we have way more successful implementations. We see quicker ROI because everybody's aligned to the metrics and how we're going to track, and also feeling that buy-in.
That's great. And with that, so you're going through that process, getting alignment, making sure you've got the right, you're focused on the right activities. Do you guys either have any stories on big successes that you've had? And then kind of a follow-up to that is, are there specific ways that you're ensuring, like, do you have a standardized format for measuring the success and the actual outcomes from a tech leadership perspective?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, honestly, we could probably take one that we did together a little bit, right? Like, you know, Tim basically, you know, came in, like I said, migrated Correlate to Aviante. One of the biggest concerns he had was, you know, they have a skills assessment group, you know, with criteria, and they also use eSkill. But really, in this case, we were the most concerned about swivel chairing, right? Nobody wanted to manage an outside system. We wanted to try to get those things into good business practice. But Tim was able to articulate a lot of those things to me, you know, as the consultant. And I was able to bring in, he brought in the direct users and kind of what we call those SMEs, right? Subject matter experts that were going to own that and champion it, you know, which is one thing I left off in that last comment, right? Most of the time, we want a project manager, sponsor, those things that help gain that adoption. But it didn't take us very long to build the integration. We waited for them to get out of implementation. And from day one, we basically had not too much of a different process of that. You know, I'll let him talk mm-hmm. to more about how he's quantifying that in terms of the investment in the ROI side. But for us, because of the fact that we had all of those parties involved, it made it more collaborative. And it also helped our relationship as the consultant and outside party He felt like we were an extension of his team. I felt like his team was invested in us. And that allowed us to do that in about 45 days, right? That's not normal. Most of what it takes 6 months, 8 months, whatever, prioritized through the product. But because we're the outside and we're not dependent on that product teams, we were able to do it a lot faster.
Yeah, to that example, Dan was talking about and alluding to, one of the things I looked at to measure that ROI was, in this case, for this particular feature, it was how many times were my people having to go outside of the tool to send off this testing and then get the results back and push it back in. And so that particular case, to your point, David, about asking how we measure in that particular case, I was measuring the times that we step out of the tool and stay in the tool. And what I was trying to do with this was to, if I could eliminate their stepping out to send the email, get the document, put it in, and it would just be there, then that was an opportunity for them to flow a little bit easier in how they do their work. So that was one way that we measured and one success that we've had. And we are going to find ways to actually sharpen that a little bit better since we pulled it out or rolled it out. I've talked to people about how are you using it? Is it working the way you thought it was going to work? Where would you like to see improvement? And again, once you put it out there, I would love to be like, hey, it's done, it's working, but you need to follow up and open that door. You really need to open that door and be okay allowing people to speak into, hey, it's not what I thought, and being okay with, okay, I need to get a little sharper. A lot of times when we, like in the gap analysis we're doing right now, a lot of things we're going to be looking at to measure how we're, you know, did we really improve it? Some of it is measurable directly, you know, quantifiable as far as either a number of clicks or the amount of time. You know, if it takes you on average 20 minutes to open a job and we make this change, you know, how long do you think it's taking your route right now? Well, man, it's really simple. Now it's on like 5. Okay, you can measure that. Sometimes, you know, and one of the things we're going to do is go back through these journeys and say, hey, this was a pain point before. Where's your motion at this right now? It's like, you know what? Hey, I'm really happy with this right now. That was really, really slick. So maybe some of the measurement is just an emotional gauge on that. The other part that I look to measure when I do some of these projects is also cost.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like, hey, if I can implement this and I can maybe get rid of this tool or sunset this tool, or if there's something custom that I sometimes would build in-house and I don't have to spend my time or somebody else on my team's time to build it in-house, that's another avenue that I'll look at.
Yeah. One other example I have is actually like what we did with shift fillers and staffing referrals, right? Basically for us, like we were probably one of your earlier clients a little bit in, right? And when we started, right, like we were trying to stay out of an ERP completely, right? So that was a V1 integration. We went from ATS, basically put you in the middle of the ATS, and we were going straight to scheduling. Well, we grew so fast, implementation, or our field team basically was like, I need a middle office. Like we need it bad. We want to bring everything that in compliance. So we went to Aviante. You know, you had integrations, but they weren't as mature as what they are today. So we, you know, essentially had some manualness, right? We were able to at least get candidates in. We could get those things. And it was great because we didn't have people coming out of that system. But maybe we were a little bit lacking in kind of that continuous, like now they've been actually interviewed and now they're on assignment. Now we're pending payment. However, we did an NPS after our second year. I think we had like a score of a 12 because we did have that fragmentation.
Yeah.
We reconnected, right? We basically sat down, looked at that. Where are we broken? You told me about integrations and optimization, right, with Aviante and the partner to product integration. We once again got that interface, though. And now we're now in the candidate screen. We can see referrals. We can see the ambassadors. And that whole UI made it a lot easier on the field teams. But we also advanced on our side that integration with our third-party payroll system. Well, now that's kind of that, you know, we went V1, V2, now really onto a V3. And now it was fully automated. Well, our referrals jumped 40%. You know, all of a sudden I saw not just the referrals jump, but average length of assignment grew 4 weeks, right? Like there were all these other more quantifiable measurements of the ROI. But that's a prime example of where, you know, most people may have just left after year one and say, oh, it's not working, start all over. We stayed committed and now watched you mature, watched Aviante mature it. We influenced a little bit of that maturity. And now all of a sudden, like now we have actual true measurable results, which is equaling to, you know, an extra 900 a month, you know, per candidate and gross margin and all these other things I just mentioned. And I just think it's a good example to kind of point out how those evolutions kind of happen and how you can actually redefine those measurables as maturity takes off.
Yeah, I think that's a great example of, and this is for my personal experience with tech investments and having launched a few different companies. I think it's the same for even your website. If you're going to go down to that basic of a level, it's like when you invest in these things, the optimization. I think a lot of the value comes from the refinement and the optimization right after the fact, depending on what the software is, what it is you're trying to achieve. But with an ATS payment system, time tracking, whatever that may be, when you're doing that, it's okay, we've got it up. Now, how do we get it, take these steps to get it to exactly where we need it to be super impactful?
Tim said something really quickly earlier, you know, but like you kind of just reiterated it. A lot of these things, like you're going to have different levels of where the gaps are and what the business pressures are. But most of us will go into these things with that like stabilize, normalize, optimize mindset. What I see the most in the industry is we get to that stabilize. We may get to normalize. That optimized side is typically lacking because of, once again, those pressures from typically either our investment groups, PE groups, you know, ownership groups, you know, that just want it instantly and not give that time of the maturity. So we caution all the time, like if you are aligned to, once again, those measurables of where you're going to gain and put processes in place to be able to report those back, you can normally get the time to get to that third level. So
I love that. I agree as well. I think there's the focusing on the optimized part. It's always nice to go to what's new, what's next, right, and what's new.
For sure. But,
well, you know what? Let's go back and look at where can we optimize with what we have. And especially in the last couple of years, I know we've had more and more conversation with people that are like, how do we get more out of our database? How do we get more out of the existing tech that we have because of the additional resource constraints that we've seen with some of the agencies? One area that I wanted to jump into and feel like you have to talk about it on every podcast is AI, but also not just AI, but kind of future tech trends. Where do you guys, there's so much going on right now with, you know, machine learning, AI, the automation is mostly adopted. I don't know that, remember the latest numbers, but the majority of staffing firms have some form of AI that they're using and also some form of automation in place. But what are some of the key trends that you guys see and things that you're excited about in terms of the future of staffing?
I can take that one first, probably. So let's start with the AI side. One of the things that I see, right, everybody's new shiny object is AI this, AI that. But what I'm seeing most in the industry is AI is almost being 100% used in like the attract, engage, hire functions of the staffing business, right? It's basically about identifying candidates either in the database or in those pre-screens to really try to drive higher quality candidates, higher volume of applicants, you know, basically so that what you're spending your money on in the job board world or programmatic world, right, you're actually getting a better value to the dollar. Personally, for me, I've just been in a different spot than some in the industry of like where those things actually have value. What you're hearing a lot of today is most of us on at least the commercial side, high volume staffing, lower skill side, we are not having problems getting applicants. I actually have way too many applicants than I do to the demands and the jobs. All right. So what it's actually done is as we've put AI in, we've actually reversed bottlenecked potential issue in the supply chain. And I use simple math. Let's just say we paid $1,000 to get 1,000 candidates. Back in the day, my recruiters would only touch maybe 10 or 20% of that applicant volume. Well, now AI touches, let's say, 80 or 90% of that applicant volume. Means now I just went from potentially 200 applicants now progressing through my compliance channels to 800. And now potentially I'm like, where am I getting the demand to follow? Most of my customers cannot onboard that exponent of, you know, exponential value of candidate just because I solved touching more of them and getting more people into a qualified setting. Right. So politely for me, I always get nervous with those things because if you're not safeguarding compliance, you're making, you know, those conditional offers, you're potentially hiring people for jobs you don't have, which comes with co-employment risk. Plus, on top of that, because we can't make biasness in decisions of the actual AI, I still keep human processes in those equations to make sure we're not violating, you know, any of the EU acts. So for us, where we've actually tried to move more of our attention into AI is actually focusing more into like the equivalent of like what we call kind of digital twins, or where do we have basically within functions of the business, human action that we can basically use more things like virtual chatbots and be able to field, you know, more of those day-to-day questions, you know, for payroll, for injuries, for those types of items that just cut back a lot of the call volume or progress those conversations. So we keep that time off of those individuals that were normally getting distracted with those things and keep them tied to the revenue generating or revenue preserving activities. You know, in terms of future product and where I see those things evolving is more to things like sales and more to things like mid and back office, because that's typically the areas that we either can't get demand or we have basically the erosion of our industry because of bad principles, either dealing with third-party systems and no way to validate against those things. Companies like TimeRack and others that I am involved in, you know, I'm seeing them do a lot better job of starting to bring some things from middle office and helping with that aggregation of data. Over time, as we start to get more data into the databases of those, you know, those are prime areas of using small language modules or large language modules to look at patterns of those behaviors and actually get into more predictive compliance areas, right? Same thing there, also in compliance, that's another area that we're seeing, right? Tacking in knowledge centers and using AI to help, you know, our candidates understand, you know, policy or how we actually want them to work with us and what tools are there to aid those days and kind of gamify that in their day, for me is a better use of time with AI today than some of that top of the funnel. A lot of these ERPs have AI built in. So getting auto matching or, you know, as we evolve more, the platform plays, right? The whole idea of having matching criteria there is to bring to life the kind of staler database moments. So, you know, for us, we're just spending more time on those other areas. And we also see that as a unique differentiator of how we're using it to some others.
That's awesome.
Dan's accurate. Where I'm looking to see the AI come in is really, it'll be there on the recruiter side helping us to, we want the personal touch to our talent and candidates. So we want to be able to get to the right ones faster, easier, smoother. That will definitely will be there. But as Dan mentioned, it's really the mid and back office where eliminating billing mistakes, eliminating the ability to understand what potential states or clients are maybe costing us a little more and recognizing that and pitching the ideas at the front end to say, hey, this is what our bill rate should be because of these areas or what we see there. Being able to understand that my people don't have to learn a new tool. Really, as you mentioned, the language models, I would really like my people to be able to speak to it and not have to learn, okay, I got to go click over here, and then I got to go click here. Then, you know, but just say, I'm looking for areas in the timesheet that are consistently missing. You know, if they could just say that, that is where I see the potential on the back offices, because there's really a lot of opportunity to pick up things that fall on the floor and smooth that out. And I think that's one of the areas I'm pushing more towards and not so much on the front of the funnel.
I have one other one that's unique that there. Imagine being in a position that you can analyze, you know, decades of data around payment history, right? You have a customer that historically pays you 20 days late, 40 days late. Now, all of a sudden, you're getting a request to basically say, hey, you should probably add this amount to your markup to offset this cost, right? That's a big area of where we basically, you know, end up in pressures of cash flow and all these other things. But to me, it's a better use of where we get those dollars back in or potentially recoup that margin that we're used to just writing off at the end of the year.
Absolutely. I'm personally excited for the replacement of UI with AI. I think that moving towards instead of remembering what tab something is filtered under, it's what question do I have and can you solve that with natural language? So.
Yeah. The other one that I'll say that's also really big is, you know, maybe a little bit kind of mid-market and enterprise driven, but I am seeing there being a lot of uses where, like, let's just say you take a company like ours working out of 15 or 20 different vendor management systems, getting to a point where you can basically look at a candidate profile from your ATS and know the 10 jobs across multiple vendor management systems, not just the one you're looking for. There's some really cool companies coming out. One of my friends, Rebecca, she owns Jobify. We're seeing that in the Bullhorn world. And same thing, I think a couple others are looking at similar things, but you know, those are major, right? You know, most of us have manual processes to go submit, different rules between the MSPs of what we have to abide by. But once again, sitting in some of that midware of like that data aggregation and trying to hold accountable third-party systems is critical because once again, most of us are victim by fat fingering something wrong. Right? Like, you know, those things always equal problems, right? We have deadlines to dispute those things. So anything that speeds us up in the life cycle of hitting these, you know, 5-day from invoice post turnarounds, dispute things and do those things faster, easier, you know, they're critical for us, especially on the margin.
That's great. And to kind of wrap things up here and jump into the last section of this conversation, pretty excited that we're all going to be, these conversations that the three of us have had over the last few weeks, we're going to be introducing a Staffing Hub Tech Roundtables. Dan, I think this is kind of your brainchild. So maybe you could give a little bit of a concept of what these roundtables will look like and maybe why they'll exist. Then we can talk about next steps for those of you that are listening today.
For sure. Well, one won't take any real glory in this, but this was really honestly Tim coming to me in our relationship saying, you know, man, like, I don't know what I would have done without the outlet of you through these processes, right? Like, I feel isolated. I don't have, you know, really peers in this industry yet. You know, if it wasn't for people like you and people that got referred to me through Aviante and some of these other places, right? Like, you know, I don't really know what that would have looked like. Well, personally for me, like I said, going back to how I started my intro, I've always felt this like unique kind of position because I've sat in staffing company, I've sat as vendor, and now I've sat as consultant that I've had such this unique kind of perspective of what these technology leaders are going. I've been also part of the enterprise CTO roundtable group for the last couple of years, but it really only exists. I mean, we limit that group to like 30 people. So when you really think about the difference of enterprise versus mid-market, mid-market is quadruple the size of enterprise. And to be fair, they're typically a little bit more under-resourced, right? So when Tim brought that to me, it was a no-brainer for me to take this on. And just because it's a passion of my life to basically collaborate with leaders like Tim, I've always had the foundational principle that we get there faster working together. And you'll hear that term like, you know, we're more co-opetition than competition, yeah. Right? Because there's a big enough pie in this for all of us to get what we want. However, having been on the pioneer and the innovative side now almost a decade, it's impossible for me to get client adoption with these things unless we have more people asking them to come into the workforce. And the reality is, you know, like everybody still kind of has a mindset, oh, maybe there's a program, you know, I need my brick and mortar 25 miles within the territory of the site. Reality is a lot of that changed in COVID, and we're just at a different world to where more things are able to be done virtually and at a high level, no differently than how the brick and mortars have always operated. But more importantly for us, these people that we interact with, you know, through these ecosystems at this point have become peers to a lot of us. And we're at industry conferences, you know, we only may get 30 minute, you know, little window. Or if you think about some of the industry groups, it's always been CFOs, CMOs. The reality is almost everything we touch is centered around technology. And our technology leaders, you know, are the ones that are having to sit here and really process this information quickly. And sometimes it's this vendor, you know, we lost a key relationship and I need to switch this now because I'm not confident that I'm going to have this, and this. Well, you can't really do those things without having the necessary resources and tools at your disposal. But really in concept, as we've talked about this, you know, we'll be keeping this segregated by ERP. So basically, you know, Aviante user, some people, technology leaders in Aviante, Bullhorn, TebWorks, you know, JobDiva, those types of things. And there's a big reason for it. A lot of it is, you know, as you get to see it a little bit more under the hood like I do, even though people use the same tools, there's these product integrations, there's always the outside API. And everybody's using something a little bit different, right? No terminology of mine and Tim between Skillworks and Shift Fillers is identical. It's very different. He calls his stages something. I call my stages something. We call things talent. He may call them employees or contractors, right? There's all this different vernacular of what people use, but typically we see a little bit more similarity. And really the goal is most of us that have come together and partnered with the Aviantes or Bullhorn are really truly there to help them get their products to what we believe that they can be. And for us to do that, it's really important that we start bringing like-minded thought leaders together and giving them an outlet. But more importantly, having lived it, touched it, breathed it, feel it for a decade, we understand that there is an emotional side of what we all go through on a day-to-day. And to be fair, there's not an outlet for technology leaders today, and we live to bring that to market. And I'm looking forward a lot of being that resource for people that are drastically, like really desperately asking for the knowledge, right? And that's really what, you know, everybody getting behind us is willing to help us deliver. And I'm just really, really excited to bring that. You know, I just feel like that's a calling that got put on my heart. And Tim, thanks for giving it.
No, it's my pleasure. You know, one of the things that I get excited about, and I naturally like to do this, I love connecting people. If I'm knowing someone and they say, man, I really needed to do this, or I really wish I knew how to do this, or I knew somebody to do this. I love saying, hey, I know someone. Hey, and I love getting them together and then watching it be like, wow, they really benefit each other. And so I really like doing that. And so that's something that I value when I have relationships. And so as I was getting into the staffing world for the first time and just trying to understand not only just what staffing is, but all the technology that is there and available, and how do you pick it out and how do you work with it? And I just found myself wanting somebody to talk to, or just find, okay, who do you would recommend to talk about this? Or, you know, what lessons learned, or how would you go about deciding if you should do something? And so I've learned it over time being in this industry now for a very short time. But as Dan mentioned, it was that kind of relationship there. But then as I've met others, it's been the opportunity to really care about their success. I care about the success of my platform and wanting them to be as successful as possible. I care about the success of, to what Dan mentioned, you know, people who are potentially competing with me, but I really want them to be successful in how they are able to serve their people and enjoy their job. And so that's one of the things I'm excited for with this group, is to bring that ability to help people be successful in what they're trying to do for their companies.
Absolutely. And I feel like the need is there, and there are, as we're all trying to learn and grow and navigate all of the market dynamics, having the network can be so powerful. And I'm excited to be moving this forward with you guys. For those of our listeners that are interested in learning more about the roundtables, there will be a form and more information on the website and the podcast notes. So go check that out. We'll also have additional information on Staffing Hub as this kind of firms up and has more details in terms of the first roundtable being scheduled. But any closing comments from either of you for the audience?
For me, I'll just say, you know, first of all, thank you to Dan and to David for this, you know, the opportunity to learn from both of you and to understand how to get better at how I'm doing this job is tremendous. I would say to the people that are out there, we'd love to have you be a part of this. You know, there's things I want to learn from you. There's things that I want to hopefully be able to add value for you. But really, it's just the desire to see you be great at your job and actually love your job and not be burned out all the time is something that we really want to be able to provide.
Yeah. You know, for me, I think, you know, what I'm really the most excited about is honestly taking this down to a granular level of really hearing the real world problems. So like, mm-hmm. I hear pretty regularly from people, but getting those things more to a higher level discussion within people that can actually make a difference is how we get there faster. But once again, I think the other side of this is kind of continuation of this article. Like, you're not alone. Like, you're not, most of us have been feeling those, you know, pressure, demand, you know, of the industry for a long time. It's honestly probably, in my opinion, one of the more depressing things that come in an industry that we actually get to have a lot of fun and just to be able to be resources to each other and be able to pick up that phone when you do have that bad day. Like, you know, that's a lot of joy that we get to bring to this. So just don't give up, keep going. And if you haven't started, start, because it's, mm-hmm. you know, definitely the way the industry is moving. And, you know, you're not alone in having to figure it out. There's plenty of people like us who have been there, done that, and can help get you started. So don't hesitate to fill that form out and come and try to learn with the rest of us.
Awesome. Well, Dan and Tim, really enjoyed having you guys on today. Great conversation, and excited about the future of this roundtable and where we take things, and connecting with all of the people that are listening and looking for help with driving their tech platform forward.
Thanks, Dave.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks so much, David. Thank you, Dan.
Thanks for listening to The Staffing Show. Don't forget to sign up for our newsletter at staffinghub.com to never miss an episode. Until next time.